This is the Brian Hayes Show on TSN 1050, the voice of Toronto sports.
The Brian Hayes Show continues, final hour of the week here on TSN 1050, online tsn1050.ca, also on the TSN Go app. We'll catch up with Mark Schlereth, our ESPN NFL analyst, here in just a moment. That Maple Leaf game last night, trying to move on. It may have scarred me for life. I did invest time watching it, and looking back on it, I kind of wish that I hadn't. That would be a tough sell. That would be the kind of game where if you PVR'd it, you hope your PVR does you a favor by erasing it before you get a chance to even watch it. That is a perfect example of what we talked about a couple of weeks ago. I think the PVR should have a feature where they know your tendencies as a fan and what you're looking for in sporting events, and they can get a read on how moody you can be, how games can affect your mood. I think we should be very intimate with our PVR. I think there should be more of a connection there where they really can get a read on us. And if you PVR a game like last night, your PVR just says, nope, not happening, kid. Not going to let you play this bad boy. For your own personal health, your own mental stability, I am not going to let you actually watch this game. All you need to know is Carolina won 1-0 in overtime, and it was awful. Because it was last night. I mean, there's nothing that you could have taken out of that game where you say, well, that was fun. I mean, I guess James Reimer. Reimer continues to play well. I've got to give credit to James Reimer. He's been very good this year. But there was no hitting, no scoring chances, no big stops, you know, no scrums, no fights, no passion, no life, nothing. I mean, there was nothing in that game last night. It was terrible. And there was a similar game to that about a week and a half ago when Columbus was in town. And I thought that would be the bottom of the barrel. I thought that game against Columbus would be the worst possible game the Maple Leafs would play in all year, and they may have trumped it last night. They can't possibly trump it tomorrow night. I hope not anyway, and they shouldn't tomorrow night. I hope the life shows up. It's starting to feel a lot more like the 80s right now. And I was young at that point, but my dad always used to tell me it didn't matter how bad the Leafs were, how good the Habs were, or vice versa, even though that rarely happened. Rarely did you see the Habs being awful and the Leafs were very good in the 80s. But he went down to the Gardens constantly, and he'd always see games between those two teams. And he'd say no matter where they were in the standings, it was always different when they played. There was always a different feeling when it was Leafs-Habs. It didn't matter what happened in the standings. Didn't matter what happened the game before, who was playing, who wasn't playing, and especially on a Saturday night. There really is nothing more precious to a Maple Leaf fan than Maple Leafs-Habs Saturday night at the ACC or at the Bell Centre in Montreal. It really doesn't matter. Either you get to be at the game or you're at home watching it, whether they're in Toronto or Montreal. It's supposed to be something that is almost boring proof. It's supposed to be must-see, must-experience TV, or hockey, for that matter. And I'm not sure we're there. I want to believe we're going to be there tomorrow night. Again, I want to believe that the way we used to look at Maple Leafs-Habs games in the 80s, even though the Leafs were terrible, you know, my understanding is people would say, I can't wait for it. It'll still be great because it's at least it's these two teams and a lot of people from Montreal will be in attendance, or a lot of Montreal fans will be in the crowd, so it'll be more lively. I want to believe that's going to happen tomorrow night, but I'm not convinced. And the biggest difference is today, you look at the game last night. Now, I understand where we're going. You know, the game is going in a different direction. Hitting, fighting, scrums after the whistle, kind of that animosity, the built-in hatred, and it playing out with, you know, some ugly hockey at times, and some ugly incidents taking place on the ice. That's the way it used to be. Now we don't see that anymore. And last night's a perfect example. I believe that game playing out the way it played out last night, 20 or 30 years ago, at some point by the end of the first period, both coaches would have said, all right, get out there, cause problems. Let's get some life in the building here. Let's get some life in the game. Line brawl. go out there and punch some guy after the whistle, drop the gloves, and let's make something happen here. And there was no way that was going to happen last night. It didn't happen last week against Columbus. We're in a different era. I get it. You know, you evolve, you grow. We're dealing with a different game right now. But last night, like if the players are not up for putting on a show in terms of what they're going to do with the puck, they're not going to do it with their shoulders. They're not going to do it with their fists. They're not going to do it with their mouths. I mean, they're not even lippy anymore. There was no life at any point in that game last night. 20, 30 years ago, it'd be very different. And I wonder how that might apply tomorrow night when the Habs are in town and they're really, really having their issues. I don't need to tell you this. The Habs are now out of a playoff spot. It's amazing that that is actually a reality considering where they were on November 1st. They were the hottest team in the league the first nine games. They went 9-0, all in regulation. At that point, I'm like, it's over. They can go 500 the rest of the way, and they're getting in, and they'll probably have home ice in the first round. Well, they're not even close to 500, and they don't score goals. They have no one that does anything offensively. Last night, the Leafs proved they're in the same boat. So if they're not going to hit, they're not going to fight, they're not going to score, what's going to happen tomorrow night that will get people all fired up? I don't know. I welcome your phone calls on this. 416-870-1050. Text us 105050 with your name. On Twitter at HaysTSN. Email us live at TSN1050.ca. Do you feel like Leafs Habs on a Saturday night will have a different feeling to it simply because of the history? Do you still buy that? Do you still believe that it's going to be totally different just because of the history of these two teams and the history of the fans? Do you think it will get to that point where if you are lucky enough to have a ticket, or maybe unlucky enough, if the game is like last night, you're going to walk in there and say, all right, now I know what it's all about here. Life in the building, built in. Built in life in the building because it is Maple Leafs Canadian Saturday night. We'll get to your feedback on this. 416-870-1050. On Twitter at HaysTSN. Email us live at tsn1050.ca. Mark Schlereth, our ESPN NFL analyst, coming up later in the hour. Your feedback next. All right, Mark Schlereth, our ESPN NFL analyst, will join me in about 15 minutes. I will revisit what I broke down in the previous hour. Which of the four remaining quarterbacks do I believe would benefit the most from winning a Super Bowl in terms of their legacy and in terms of the way we view them, both short-term and long-term? Get to that in about 15, 20 minutes. Leafs-Habs tomorrow night. And I know it's coming off a game last night that is very difficult to spin in any positive light. I mean, that game last night was bad. It was a tough game to watch. And Babcock, you know, to his credit, has been very honest. I think he's kind of getting away with a few things in terms of him taking direct or indirect shots at his team. You know, the past week, he's been pretty honest. He's like, we just can't do anything. We don't have the players to do it. We are not any good. We are not very good. And he said that post-game last night when he was asked about the lack of offense. He said, what do you expect, man? What do you want to do here? And he clarified that today, but not really, because I don't think he changed his opinion. He said, listen, we don't have an Ovechkin here, so we got to grind out offense. We got to spread the wealth. Well, spreading the wealth when you don't have much of it leads to games like we saw last night. And the same thing applies with the Montreal Canadiens. Now, PK Subban will still be playing, and PK loves the ACC, and I would expect he will put on a show tomorrow night. Max Pacioretty, we know, can score goals, but they don't have a lot of offense over there either, and the guys that were scoring for them earlier in the season, it's all dried up. So if you're going in there thinking it's going to be a low-scoring game, does that just suck the life out of the ACC right off the bat? Or if you have the ability to go or you had the chance to go, do you think it'll just be a great vibe simply because it's Maple Leafs Canadiens? Because it's the biggest rivalry here, because it's Toronto v. Montreal, because you know Habs fans will be there, and I don't know. I mean, based on what I saw last night, what I've seen recently out of both teams, I'm not convinced the life will be where you would hope it would be. Brian in Toronto wants to get in on that. Go ahead, Brian.
Hey, Brian, how's it going?
I'm well, buddy. Thank you.
First off, I just want to say I was listening to Leafs Lunch, and you guys either have to get Mr. Pesci on the show or get O-Dog to find out what his nickname is, because that's something that's been bugging me since about 1 o'clock.
I know. The kid Brett Pesci in Carolina, right?
Yeah, man. It's just he was built to have a nickname of Joe. There's nothing else you can do.
I agree with you. But like Ray said, he thinks it might be Pesh. Like they might just call him Pesh.
Well, I mean, I play hockey as well, and nothing pro-like, but generally we throw one or two letters at the end, and then we just call everybody that.
Yeah.
But when you have it's pretty much set up for you to have an all-time legendary nickname.
He's got to be Joe, and I'm with you, man. If he's not known as Joe in that room, all of them should be suspended for life, in my opinion.
Absolutely.
Anyway, for tomorrow night, what do you think about this?
You know what? I was at the game last night, and it's a little different vibe when you're at the game. I know you go to a bunch of games. It didn't feel as bad, but when you kind of retrace the steps of the game, you really think that was pretty awful. Like, there really wasn't much. I mean, let's face it. It was a 0-0 hockey game going into overtime, and how many 0-0 hockey games are there anymore?
Right.
So it was pretty tough, but I think tomorrow, I think you're going to see some jump, and you're going to see some fire, because, I mean, it is Leafs-Habs, and there's guys that have been playing on both teams that have been part of the series for a few years now. And I think because the Habs are in such a slump that I think they're like a ticking time bomb ready to go. And, you know, PK coming back to Toronto is always a good sign. You know, things are going to happen. But, you know, one bad goal goes in on Condon or something, and it's just, it's a fire show out there. It's going to be guys hacking people, going at dirty hits on the board. So I think it has potential to get pretty, you know, maybe not ugly, but, an eventful game.
Well, it could, as long as the Maple Leafs play into that. I totally agree with your assessment of the Habs. I mean, they're a powder keg just ready to be set off right now. I mean, they are absolutely falling apart. They've got their GM coming out and saying that the coach is going to stick around, even though, you know, the coach doesn't feel great about his security at this point. And they're just crawling away. I mean, they're trying to hold on for dear life. So I agree with you that the Habs will likely have intensity, and they have to feel like this is a borderline must-win game or as close to it as possible with this much time left in the season. But then it's on the Maple Leafs to supply some life, too, and some passion, too. And I don't know if they'll do that right now, because they know where they're at, right? They're not holding on for dear life. Their season is done in terms of the playoff picture. So I hope you're right, but
Do you think, like, I mean, Babcock's been around a long time. He's also, you know, a native of the city. Do you think going into a game like that tomorrow, he's maybe not extra words. I mean, everyone's a professional hockey player. They know what they're doing. But do you feel like Saturday night, ACC, Leafs, Habs, these guys kind of put pressure on themselves to, okay, we got to go out there and really put on a show for the people?
I don't think they think put on a show. I think they think let's go out there and pick up a big win for sure. I know Babcock loves the big moment, and he loves the history of these two teams, and he appreciates the history of both teams. And let's not forget, he went to school in McGill. I think in a perfect world, Babcock may pick coaching the Habs over coaching the Maple Leafs, but that was not available to him last year. And I appreciate the call, Brian. And I do wonder, I'd love to be a fly on the wall or get Babcock into a candid moment and ask him if he's wondering, with what's going on with Therrien right now, if he felt like he could have maybe signed a one-year deal in Detroit and then be a UFA again next summer, would he rather have done that and held out with the intention of maybe scooping up the Canadiens coaching gig? Like, if Therrien's gone in the summer, Babcock may have missed out on what I have heard was really a dream job for him, because he went to school in McGill. He went to school in Montreal, and I don't know. I mean, that would be interesting. I don't think he'd say anything about that now, clearly, and I don't think he ever should. I mean, he's employed by the Leafs. He's getting paid a lot of money by the Leafs, and he works hard for the Maple Leafs. I mean, there's no reason. I'm not saying that his mind isn't in the right place. Of course it is. But I think last year he probably was looking at what was going on in Montreal. You know, they win every year. Therrien's done a lot of really good things and probably thought, he's going to be there for a while. Maybe he won't be. You know, maybe he won't be. But I think Babcock, he's not going to coach any differently. He's not going to coach with more passion tomorrow night. But I think Babcock understands the significance of Maple Leafs Canadian Saturday night. And he understands the history of both teams. 416-870-1050. Marco is up next. Go ahead, Marco.
Hey, Brian, how you doing?
I'm well, buddy. Thank you. What's on your mind?
I'm excited for the game tomorrow. It's still Habs Leafs, and mostly because of the pompous, self-righteous Hab fans that come on the radio, that get on Twitter, on with you, me, and everyone, and they basically teach Toronto how to make a franchise and what a great team Montreal is, trash the Leafs every single time. When we've, what I've said from day one, Montreal is the Toronto Maple Leafs, except they got Carey Price. They stink. They're terrible. No one talks about when they're terrible. Like now they're saying, oh, they don't score. Well, watch a bunch of their games. PK's not been good either, but no one trashes on him like they would if Phaneuf was playing bad. They are, in essence, the Leafs, except they had Carey Price to make them look better, just like when we had Cujo back in the day. They're terrible. I can't wait it. Babcock's Leafs are going to pounce on them and add insult to injury. They're going to miss the playoffs because they're the most overrated team ever assembled in the NHL.
All right, Marco. I'm glad you called in because I threw this out earlier in the week. If the Habs miss the playoffs, that means they will be in the draft lottery. And that is the area in which the Maple Leafs and their fan base is really most focused on right now. They want to see where the Leafs are going to pick in this upcoming draft. Earlier in the year, the Habs were on fire, and people were saying, you know what, they could win a Stanley Cup. As a Leaf fan, what would be more difficult for you to deal with? The Habs winning a Stanley Cup this year, or the Habs winning the draft lottery and picking first overall?
Habs winning the draft lottery, hands down.
Right.
I would throw up. I think I'd burn the Bell Center down or at least Bettman's office. That'd be awful.
Yeah.
I wasn't worried about them winning a cup because they were so monstrously overrated. You know, they lined up with Thomas Plekanec, and here they were talking like they had Sagan lined up over there. It was unbelievable. They got Jamie Benn, and they're talking about we got Galchenyuk, and if that's any kind of an argument. They're the most self-righteous franchise, and their fan base is even worse than the team itself. Can't wait till Babcock's Leafs hand it to him Saturday.
Thank you for the call. There he is, Marco in Mississauga, rallying the troops tomorrow night. And the way he answered that, I believe, is the correct way to answer that. I went into it in detail earlier in the week, but if the Habs won a Stanley Cup, I mean, we've been down that road 24 times. I don't care about that. I mean, it wouldn't be fun. It wouldn't be easy, but I could deal with it. If the Habs missed the playoffs and won the draft lottery and picked first overall, I don't know if I could be a Leaf fan anymore. I don't know if I could stay in the city. I don't know if I could keep doing these shows. I mean, it would just be unbearable. It'd be unbearable to listen to Habs fans gloat about that. And tomorrow night, I mean, it's an opportunity for the Maple Leafs to either spark the Habs and get them rolling again or just keep burying them. Because it was announced yesterday, Carey Price, he's not coming back anytime soon. I think he's going to be out for at least a month, if not more. So you're talking another 12, 15 games. I don't think, the Habs, can they save themselves? I'm not sure they can. Interesting what Marco also said about PK. PK's numbers and his stats are pretty good. I think he's got 33 points, and they played 45, 47 games. So he's on pace for probably 55 points. For a defenseman, that's obviously very good. But it doesn't feel as if PK is having the same impact this year, and especially recently when they've really needed more of a spark. And I wonder if PK is getting saved by Carey Price. Like, I feel like everyone is under the same umbrella. The fact that Carey Price is injured, it's like everyone gets a free pass. Hey, what do you want out of us, man? Carey's not playing. And earlier in the year, Habs fans and Habs players really kept coming out and saying, listen, this is not only about Carey Price. We are legitimately a very good team. It's not about one guy. And Price was the guy leading that. I mean, he couldn't wait to get in front of a microphone and say, if you think this is all about me, you're stupid, you're silly, you're wrong, you're a fool. It's a team game. We're all on top of this. We're all moving this in the right direction. And then Price gets injured, leaves for a couple months, and this is the product you get. I'd like to get, I think it was David Desharnais, maybe it was Plekanec, who was so outspoken about how they don't just rely on Carey Price. Let's get him to revisit that statement tomorrow night down at the ACC. Mark Schlereth coming up, our ESPN NFL analyst. We'll look ahead to the weekend, championship weekend, AFC and NFC title games. You can hear both right here on TSN 1050. And I will recap how I would rank the four quarterbacks left and which one would benefit the most from a Super Bowl ring. That more coming up. This is The Brian Hayes Show. TSN Drive with Dave Naylor up at 4 p.m. We'll tee that up later in the hour. Get to our best bets brought to you by ProLine. You know the games we're looking at, the football games on Sunday. Caught up with Mark Schlereth, our ESPN NFL analyst, earlier this afternoon. And I began by talking about Peyton because I've been intrigued by the way the conversation surrounding Peyton and his game last weekend seems to have changed over the course of the week. Charlie Casserly joined me yesterday and came out and said he thought Peyton played really well. I heard Trent Dilfer with Naylor come out and say the same thing. So I began the conversation catching up with Mark by asking him, does he believe the poor form of Peyton Manning has been exaggerated?
Yeah, you know what? He certainly didn't play horribly, but he wasn't as sharp as he normally was, and he's been out for 7 weeks, so that's understandable. Receivers certainly dropped a bunch of balls. There's no question about that. But I think one of the reasons is the way teams play him right now. They take away the middle of the field and challenge him to make the tough throws outside the numbers. And honestly, he looks hurt. He just can't deliver the football like he used to be able to deliver the football. So there are some weaknesses there. The other thing that really bothered me about the game last week is there were a couple of protections that he didn't get changed, that he didn't see. So he got hit right between the shoulder blades on a blitz that he didn't change a protection on, and also there was another basically bad protection they were in that he didn't change. Those are things that Peyton Manning, like, never misses. And to see him miss those two plays was a little concerning for me to watch that.
Well, and there's going to be focus on the quarterback position, of course, but you just mentioned the coverage where Peyton and the Broncos, they're okay with running the ball. They'll run the ball on first and second down. Brady on the other side, man, he's throwing, it feels like, 50 times a game, and I almost feel like he's going to do that this weekend. With the Broncos pass rush being as potent as it is, can Brady survive if he's wanting to throw the ball that much?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. When they throw the ball 80% of the time, the Patriots, they are 6-1, which goes, you know, it's counterintuitive when you think about it. Now, here's the difference. When Edelman and Gronk are on the field together and healthy together, it's almost a 0.4 of a second difference between snap to release time for Brady when those two are off the field or on the field. What that means is a pass rush that normally would get to the quarterback won't get to him because he gets rid of the ball so quickly, and that's what you saw the very first drive, 11 straight passes. New England took it to Kansas City, who has a great front seven. They couldn't even sniff Tom Brady. So that's really the kind of what they want to do, and I think they match up pretty well because the Broncos love to play man coverage. The New England Patriots love the quick pick routes. They love to get Gronkowski off the line of scrimmage and outside wide in man coverage against a linebacker. He's too fast. Against the cornerback, he's too strong. I think they match up really well there, and I think you will see that where they throw it 80-plus percent of the time.
With longtime NFLer, three-time Super Bowl champ, and current ESPN NFL analyst Mark Schlereth here on The Brian Hayes Show, there's been a lot of, you know, smack talk going back and forth, most of it coming from Denver and calling out Brady and Chris Harris talking about how they have to take down Gronkowski, and if they have to go low, they'll go low. When you get to this point, when you're in an AFC title game, you played in many of them, does bulletin board really factor in to the emotion, or are you just jacked up regardless of what's being said? I mean, do you really need something to spark more emotion if you're the New England Patriots?
No, you don't need anything. You know, and once the ball's kicked off, you don't ever think about the smack talk or the bulletin board material. But what it comes down to is you got a locker room of 53 guys. Not every guy's a professional. So what ends up happening when you get a lot of bulletin board material, it does make some of those guys who aren't maybe the best preparation guys, it does hone their focus a little bit. So you essentially get a better week of preparation from a study standpoint and also from a practice standpoint, and that translates to playing better on Sunday. And I think that's where bulletin board makes the most sense. You know, once the ball's kicked off, like I said, you don't think about that stuff. You never think about, that guy said this about me. You're out there trying to do your job. Once the game's over and it's in hand, then you say, yeah, it serves them right for talking all that smack. But I don't think it affects the game, really, from an emotional standpoint whatsoever.
With ESPN NFL analyst Mark Schlereth. All right, moving over to the NFC. Carson Palmer, he had a tough week last week. I mean, it was a really ugly outing for him, but he had a great regular season. Which Carson Palmer do you believe we will see this weekend?
I think you'll see the good one. I think that's monkey off your back syndrome. He had never won a playoff game, and he played tight. There was no question about it. But the thing I loved, when push came to shove in overtime, he found Larry Fitzgerald, and he exploited them. You know, he had the long pass to Larry Fitzgerald. Then they got down in the red zone. He threw a fade to Larry Fitzgerald, and then they threw the shovel pass to Larry Fitzgerald. So, you know, you lean on your strengths, no question about it. Bruce Arians, their head coach, did a great job of that. But I think you're going to see a much more relaxed, much better Carson Palmer. And he's facing a defensive secondary in Carolina that's been decimated by injuries. And they got exploited in the second half of that game against Seattle. So it should be a really good matchup.
I mentioned what Chris Harris had to say earlier in the week about stopping Gronkowski. And I wonder how that might apply to the way the Cardinals are going to approach Cam Newton. And Cam's a beast. I mean, 6'4", 6'5", 240. He'll take on contact. He'll run between the tackles. He'll get outside of the pocket. He's got a great arm. I mean, might it get to a point where the Cardinals feel like they really have got to take runs at him? And even if they do take runs, do you think it can work? And can they shut down a guy like Cam Newton?
Yeah, you know what? You try to take runs at him, no question. You want to tattoo him. I mean, that's part of the game, and that's why it's the greatest game on earth. But the bottom line is, I went back and watched their wild card matchup from last year where Carolina ran the ball for, I believe, 188 yards, and they eviscerated that defense. And the problem that you get into with that offense when you're facing it, that read option offense, is eye discipline. You have got to have great eye discipline. If you're assigned to the quarterback, you've got to hit the quarterback. If you're assigned to the fullback and the dive, you've got to hit the fullback or the dive. If you're assigned to the pitch man, you've got to play the pitch man. And the problem is, it's hard when all of a sudden you flash that football out there and everybody sees it and goes, oh, my God, there's a football, and you go off your assignment. That killed them. So it's hard to get great shots on guys when you're off assignment. That makes you off balance. And then the other thing they didn't do well because they were off balance, they missed a boatload of tackles. I bet you there was probably 50, 60, 70 yards. And this is just the eyeball test. As I watched the game the other day, there was probably 60, 70 yards of extra yards after first contact on missed tackles alone.
With ESPN NFL analyst Mark Schlereth. Before I let you go, Mark, let's get to the real stuff here, buddy. Your son just signed a minor league deal here with the Blue Jays, and he's a pitcher. He's been up in the big leagues. Give me the dad scouting report for all the Jays fans out there listening to this.
Well, he can certainly spin it. He used to be a real hard-throwing lefty. He's dropped down a little sidearm because he had a shoulder injury for the last couple of years. He's been bouncing around the league. He's healthy for the first time in a long time. And if he can command his fastball in the low to mid-90s, he could be pretty dangerous. We'll see if he can get that done. But he's worked his butt off, and he's really excited to be a Blue Jay.
All right, buddy. If they get back to the playoffs, you got to get up here and party, okay?
I'll be up there, no question about it, Brian.
Great stuff, Mark. Thank you for doing this. Enjoy it this weekend.
My pleasure.
My conversation with Mark Schlereth, longtime NFLer, three-time Super Bowl champ, current ESPN NFL analyst. So we touched a lot on the quarterbacks there, but I got to this around 2:15. I'll revisit here quickly. The four quarterbacks left, Peyton, Brady, Cam Newton, Carson Palmer. I was reading about this last night, and I talked about it earlier. Which quarterback would benefit the most from winning a Super Bowl? In terms of their legacy, the here and now, and 5, 10, 20 years down the road. I have Carson Palmer in the fourth spot. I think it'll be more about Larry Fitzgerald winning that ring, Bruce Arians being this new, progressive, cool coach. Even though the offense has been great this year, I think people still think of the defense for some reason when it comes to Arizona. And I think Palmer is too late into his career for being a part of any all-time list. You know, I don't think Carson Palmer, if he wins a ring, all of a sudden people are going to say, oh, he's an all-time great or in the top 15 or top 20. That ship sailed a long time ago. He'll become one of the quote-unquote one-off quarterbacks. The Joe Flacco types, the Rob Johnson types, the Trent Dilfer types. Fairly or unfairly, a Super Bowl ring will not really change his status all time. Number three is Brady.
although I think you could move him up. The top three, it's really difficult to rank this. I got Brady 3 because, for me, he's already wrapped up the all-time greatest QB title. For me, he's the all-time greatest. Based on what I've seen and based on my era, he's the greatest quarterback I've ever seen play. So he's already wrapped that up. If he wins another Super Bowl, you can't go higher than number one. But it would have been too easy to say Brady comes in fourth because of that. I do think there are a couple of angles here that lead to me putting him in the third spot, and maybe you could move him up to maybe one or two. If he wins another Super Bowl, he becomes the first ever with 5 Super Bowl rings. And the Goodell Deflategate stuff, that angle plays in here as well. Seeing Roger Goodell pretend to be happy that Brady won a Super Bowl, I think would be high theater. I think it would be brilliant. Number two is Cam Newton, because I think he's going to win the MVP for the regular season. He's got the top spot in the NFL with a record of 15-1. Because he is the go-to offensive weapon, if they win a Super Bowl, I believe he would win the Super Bowl MVP. So what he would have a chance to do here would be put together an all-time great hardware season. Regular season MVP, quarterback of the best team in the regular season, wins a Super Bowl, and likely would win Super Bowl MVP. That puts him in rare territory. Also, he's young enough to win multiple Super Bowls, so this could be a launching pad for that. So I got Cam number two. The quarterback that I think would benefit the most from a Super Bowl ring, though, of the four remaining quarterbacks, for me, it's Peyton Manning, because he'd have a chance to go out on top. And him walking away with 2 Super Bowl wins would put him in the type of rarefied air for those all-time quarterbacks. He gets out of that one-and-done type category. He moves into rare territory. He also ties his brother Eli, and then there's never a debate, not that there ever should have been, in terms of who is the better quarterback. Clearly, Peyton always has been, always will be. But some people say, well, Eli's got 2. Well, if Peyton gets 2, that conversation comes to an end quickly. And I also think over time, the Super Bowl numbers and the playoff numbers will become more and more flattering for Peyton Manning. They will look better and better as time goes on, because I believe he's already considered the greatest regular season quarterback of all time. But winning 2 Super Bowls and going to the game 4 times also goes a long way. 2 rings, 4 games, that's a great resume. To go along with 5 MVPs in the regular season and everything that he's done during the regular season, I think Peyton winning another Super Bowl would benefit him more so than any of the other 3 QBs. I think Palmer is dead last by a mile, and then it's tight with Cam and Brady. Top spot for me is Peyton. TSN Drive with Dave Naylor coming up at 4 p.m. We'll tee that up. We'll get to our best bets, brought to you by ProLine. This is The Brian Hayes Show. TSN Drive with Dave Naylor up at 4 p.m. Masai Ujiri, the GM of the Raptors, will join the boys at 5:30. So you got Raptors Heat tonight down at the ACC. The Miami Heat have a bunch of starters out of the lineup, so this should be borderline guaranteed win night for the Raps, but you never know. The Raps have been playing really well, though, recently, and Kyle Lowry, DeMar DeRozan, they've been on fire. I expect that to continue tonight. So you got that game going tonight. Maple Leafs, Canadiens tomorrow night. I don't think it's going to be a great game the way these two teams have been playing, but it's Leafs, Habs. Let's roll the dice here, hope for the best. Let's hope for some passion, some animosity, bunch of goals, maybe a hit or a fight here or there, a crowd that is rambunctious. Let's hope for that. No guarantees. And let's face it, Sunday, I mean, that's where it really gets down to business here, where we got the AFC and NFC game, Denver playing host to New England, and Carolina playing host to Arizona. Both games can be heard right here on TSN 1050. And time now for our best bets, brought to you by ProLine. We're looking at the 2 games. We're not going to make this confusing. We're not going to add a third or a fourth game. It's simple. New England at Denver, Arizona at Carolina. I hate the way ProLine has set this up, because it's New England -3.5, Carolina -3.5. That half point both ways makes this greasy. I feel like one of the games likely will come down to a field goal. But it's too difficult for me to pick, and I'm liking both favorites in both games. I picked before the playoffs started, I thought New England would beat Carolina in the Super Bowl. I'm going to stick with that. I will take New England -3.5 on the road. That is tough. That is tough. I think that could be the game that could be determined by a field goal. But I will take New England -3.5 on the road in Denver, and I'm taking Carolina -3.5 at home against Arizona. Throw down $20 on both of them. If you score both of them correct, you can win $40. You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio and get way into the game with ProLine. It's the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. Before you wager, get the latest odds, event info, and matchup stats on your phone. ProLine, get way into the game. So it should be a great weekend. Try to enjoy yourselves. Don't forget, you can find everything podcasted online, tsn1050.ca. You can also check us out on iTunes, every hour of The Brian Hayes Show and every hour of Leafs Lunch up there on iTunes and on tsn1050.ca. TSN Drive with Dave Naylor is up next. Enjoy that. Enjoy your weekends. We are back Monday at noon. We'll chat then.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot for that look into sports, Brian.
Yeah.